from Huntington to Pittsburgh, Warminster to Clearfield, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, finding qualified employees has jumped ahead of taxes and regulation as the biggest problems facing Pennsylvania employers. David Taylor and our Capital Watch crew are here to review results of the Spring 2019 Keystone Business Climate Survey. And House Speaker Mike Terzai has proposed an Energize PA initiative to secure our state's recent economic gains. But Governor Tom Wolf threatens the business climate with a radical environmental agenda. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania has, shall we say, a rather unique method of electing our lieutenant governors. Currently, candidates for governor and lieutenant governor run in separate primary elections. After the primary, the nominees are then paired as a ticket in the general election, with voters casting one ballot for governor-lieutenant governor combined. This has led to some awkward pairings over the years. Most recently, Governor Tom Wolf had a rocky relationship with Lieutenant Governor Mike Stack. This during his first term. Stack was defeated by current Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, who enjoys a significantly warmer relationship with the governor. But now a bill has passed the state Senate that would amend the Constitution to change the process. Under the proposed amendment, each party's nominee for governor would pick their lieutenant gubernatorial running mate after the primary. That process would ensure more harmony among the two candidates. To amend the Constitution, the bill would have to pass two consecutive sessions of the General Assembly and then be approved by voters in a statewide referendum that could happen in time for the next scheduled lieutenant gubernatorial election in 2022. Meanwhile, a bill that would boost the amount of tax revenue the state forgoes in tax credits to those who donate to private school scholarships and foundations from $160 million to $260 million per year is advancing in the State House of Representatives. It is the most significant expansion of the popular Education Improvement Tax Credit, or EITC, scholarship program. Demand for the tax credit has exceeded available resources the past few years. The bill is sponsored by House Speaker Mike Terzai. It's passed out of committee last week and now headed to the full House floor for a vote. As gas from the Marcellus Shale region flows into the soon-to-be-completed Mariner East pipeline, the Marcus Hook Industrial Complex near Philadelphia will take on new life. Officials there announced a $200 million building project that will include additional warehousing, butane chillers, storage facilities for ethane, and increased pumping capabilities. The project will create over 1,200 construction jobs. Project labor agreement with area labor unions means non-union companies will be frozen out of those jobs, but the new facilities will dramatically improve Pennsylvania's competitive position in the energy market. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Pennsylvania's economy continues to grow as tax cuts and reduced federal regulations have created a strong business climate. Results of the Spring 2019 Keystone Business Climate Survey are in, and all that growth has created an unfilled demand for qualified employees. David Taylor and Carl Marrera of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association are joined by Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business for this Capital Watch roundtable discussion. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio today, Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Rebecca, thanks for being on the show.
Happy to be here again. Thank you.
And it's a wonderful surprise. We've got my main man, Carl Marrera, PMA's Vice President of Government Affairs. Carl, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to be here.
So we're going to kick it around. Our good friend Loman Henry at the Lincoln Institute for Public Opinion Research twice a year conducts the Keystone Business Climate Survey in the spring and the fall. Well, the spring survey results are in, and I know that you guys have had the chance to take a look at them. What were your big takeaways? What did you notice most about the latest Keystone Business Climate Survey?
For me, one of the big takeaways is something that backs up what NFIB has found in its recent surveys as well over the past couple of months, is that businesses are really having a hard time finding employees right now. And that's because our unemployment rate is low. Pennsylvania has hit 3.9% now. So we really do have a low unemployment rate. There aren't a lot of people out looking for jobs right now. So employers are having a difficult time finding employees.
One of the questions that was asked, the plan to legalize and commercialize recreational marijuana, and that 62% of the employers who responded to that question were opposed, and of them, 44% strongly opposed. There were 31% supporting legalization, but that these employers said, we are already experiencing difficulty finding qualified hires who can pass a drug test, and that half of respondents said that legalization of recreational marijuana would negatively impact their business, with 34% saying that the negative impact would be significant. And again, it just seems like common sense. If you have a workplace where you need a sober workforce, that, you know, decriminalizing recreational marijuana would move everything, give it a good hard shove in the wrong direction.
This is an issue that I think on its face, not a lot of people look at it from the employer's viewpoint. And I applaud the survey for putting this question in there, because it's a discussion that needs to be had. And, you know, when you're dealing with the employer community, God forbid something happens, especially on a manufacturing plant floor, but really in any part of the sector, of the employment sector, if an accident happens and damages happen, whether that be to a person, another person, or whether that be to equipment, one of the very first thing that's going to happen after everybody is safe and the situation is isolated is a drug test is going to happen. And that drug test, if it comes back as failed, the next question is going to be to go back to that employer to say, well, what did you do to ensure a sober workforce?
Mm-hmm.
And with the legalization of marijuana, there are scientific and technological limits as to how THC can be tested. And that THC stays in the system for a super long period of time. And it's really difficult to tell whether or not that individual had just used marijuana or used it 10, 20 days ago. But nonetheless, the test comes back the same. And that employer is then going to be liable for any of the damages. And quite honestly, then you're not going to have a business. And an accident by one person can affect the livelihood of an entire company.
It makes sense that anything that would diminish that pool of new hires, employers are going to be strongly opposed.
Yeah, that number did not actually stand out to me at all. The fact that employers adamantly oppose that type of policy to legalize recreational marijuana was not surprising.
And so the Keystone Business Climate Survey, which has been conducted now for, I think, over 20 years by our friend Loman Henry, that we get a pattern of response, and that, you know, some of these questions, most of these questions are asked in the same verbiage every time. And, you know, it's to track trends. And so one of the trends is, you know, how do you expect business, you know, how is business now? How do you expect it to be 6 months from now? And so the numbers are coming back that people are – respondents said that they expect things to stay the same, but – we've had a trend over the last several surveys where things are sharply higher. So I guess the result is that because things are better, the good news is that employers now expect them to stay that way.
Yeah, I would say so. This survey backs up again. I'll just come back to what NFIB has found over the past couple of years, which focuses on – or past couple of months, which focuses on small businesses, obviously. But they're clearly having some of the same experience as the respondents to this survey here in Pennsylvania. The Small Business Optimism Index hit a record high late last year, and it's bumped down to a few notches, but – as trends go, it is still at a record high level over the past couple of months. So that would sort of back up what the survey here is finding, that yes, we're sort of staying steady here with business optimism generally, but that's a result of the high optimism that became a factor at the end of last year, I think.
This is a classic good news, bad news type of thing, right? As optimism goes up, what do businesses want to do? They want to expand. They want to hire. Well, the problem, the bad news, is that there aren't people to hire. So, I mean, this really is kind of the epitome of a good news, bad news economic study or survey of the employer community, because there simply aren't the people to fill the job. So whenever you have a down economy, what's the number one thing that people worry about? Things like taxes, things like the cost of the regulatory system. And while those still are concerns for the employer community, as found by the survey, I mean, by far the number one the thing that keeps these businesses up at night is the ability to find workers to plug into their operations. Classic good news, bad news type of survey. Well,
and the listeners may have heard me say this along the way, but it winds up being a hard cap on growth because it's a question of capacity. If the work is out there to be done, but you at your firm don't have enough staff to handle it, that means that, you know, that there are contracts that you can't bid on, that there's work that you can't go after because you don't have the staff power, the means of doing the work if you got it.
And let's face it, government thinks that it has the answers, but the employer community is telling us otherwise. The employer community is saying that they're not necessarily utilizing state or federal programs to find these employees. And I can't blame them because the systems are often so convoluted and so difficult and complex to navigate that they don't seek them out. Instead, I think we need to rely on government focusing on the best practices that are already out there. There are so many organizations doing great work. We don't need to reinvent the wheel, but we need to make that wheel turn faster. And if the government can allow those wheels to turn a little bit faster, I think employers will find the people that they need. Case in point, one of the things that Governor Wolf, I mean, talking about workforce development is really it's kind of a political buzz right now, and the governor has fallen square into that. But at the same time, he's saying that we need to expand all these workforce development programs, he's calling for an increase to the state minimum wage of $15 per hour. Here's an interesting statistic. And I would argue that one of the main reasons that employers are having a hard time finding employees is because they're entering into the workforce far too late. In 1978, the percentage of the workforce that was ages 16 to 24 was 24.5%. In 2018, 12.5%.
Wait, what?
So what's the reason for that? Are there less young people who want a job? Probably not. I would argue it's a lot of the red tape. It's a lot of the things like a mandatory minimum wage that are barriers of entry from allowing those people to get that first step into the workforce where they're going to learn the soft skills. Soft skills do include showing up on time, being respectful, talking to customers in a polite way. And those are the things that you learn at the local Tasty Freeze, a lot of Rebecca's members at the pizza shop. Those are the jobs that are not going to be filled by high school students or college students that are trying to pay for books, because the barriers to the workforce are so much greater because of government intervention.
Yeah, and the longer we delay that first contact with the private workforce, the less acculturated people are to that discipline of work.
Yeah, that's right. The survey here, if we look at it, actually found that the number one reason that employers are having difficulty finding applicants is they're lacking essential skills, which exactly gets to the point that Carl was just making. And in fact, NFIB members, our small businesses, we know that they consider work experience to be more valuable than formal education in a lot of cases. Behind high school, a third of small businesses don't have any requirement for education beyond high school. So they are hiring this sort of starter position in a lot of places. Just like Carl was saying, a lot of small businesses depend on employees who don't have a lot of formal training or education, but they need to hire them at a wage that's viable for their business. And if you make that wage out of reach for them, then they're not going to hire those folks anymore, and they're not going to be able to get the experience they need to move ahead in the workforce.
So there's a lot of fascinating stuff in these survey results. The Keystone Business Climate Survey can be found online at the website of the Lincoln Institute for Public Opinion Research, and that's lincolninstitute.org. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania, and Carl Marrera, also from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. One of the other really interesting things to happen recently in the Capitol was that the Speaker, our friend Mike Terzai from Allegheny County, and a whole team of his fellow House members rolled out an agenda that they're calling Energize PA, which is just a different take on approaching these issues, that Governor Wolf wanting new additional taxes on energy production, and that it's all the mindset is focused on what can we take now rather than how can we help this industry to grow so that it's bigger, adds more value, generates more wealth, employs more people, and as a result brings more tax revenue to Harrisburg. So so the Speaker and, like I said, a bunch of his other caucus mates rolled out this Energize PA agenda. Rebecca, did you have any chance to take a look at that?
I did look over it. And it's like you said, it really does recognize that the significant opportunity that natural gas resources present in the Commonwealth. There are actually eight bills. It's a pretty big package. There are eight bills that have a bunch of reforms and, in some cases, expanded programs that encourage natural gas development, and also sort of streamline and speed up and make more efficient permitting processes mm-hmm. that would be necessary for businesses to grow as a part of this agenda.
I was actually at the Rhine Building to witness the conference and hear the legislators talk about their bills. The first one up was of State Representative Aaron Coffer from Northeastern PA, that he had a bill that mirrors the existing Pennsylvania Resource Manufacturing Tax Credit. And that was the instrument that was used. It's a production-based tax credit for ethylene. And that was how we managed to make the Shell facility that's being built in Beaver County. That's how we were able to make that viable, and that's an ethylene facility. And so this legislation would take that same approach, but apply it to methylene, which is what you get when you process methane. So it's like another approach to expand the benefits of petrochemical manufacturing.
And this is classic Eastern Pennsylvania versus Western Pennsylvania, but in this case you have it in the rivalry of the dry gas versus the wet gas. So out in the western part of Pennsylvania where that ethane is so prevalent, ethane is actually a byproduct or seen as a byproduct in natural gas, but it's very valuable resource. And when you can separate it from the other products that come out of the ground, that's when you can make ethylene that then makes things like polyethylene, which mm-hmm. BASF, one of the most famous chemical companies in the whole world, actually said is, you know, the most important manufacturing material in the world. But in the northern tier and in the eastern part of the state, that's where you have all of the what's referred to as dry gas, which is mainly methane.
It's just pure methane, which is what we think of as natural gas.
Typically, a lot of the times that's used to do things like fire power plants and to be used at your home whenever you're cooking dinner or heating your home. But you can actually use that resource and, like you said, create the methylene, which then is in and of itself a manufactured good, but then can make other things from it. And if that tax credit were to go through, that could be a major, major incentive to bring some major manufacturing to that northern tier of Pennsylvania where it's so desperately needed.
Well, another area where these bills sort of bring some things together is regulatory reform, which also generally has been a big area of discussion in the Capitol this week. They in the House ran some regulatory reform bills this week, but the proposals in the in this Energize PA package specifically are geared toward helping the development of natural gas. And in one case, there's actually a bill that consolidates standards for permits for brownfields development, which I think is a great idea to encourage development of industry on existing brownfields.
Right, former industrial sites that are dormant, instead of tearing up what they call greenfield or farmland open space that's never been used for industrial purposes.
one of the other bills, which sort of is not directly related to regulatory reform, but also has to do with brownfields development and former industrial sites, is actually the proposal that's a bill that would develop a registry of abandoned manufacturing sites in the Commonwealth that would be searchable, so that if a business were looking to come to Pennsylvania, they could find the sort of ready-made sites that are eligible for development and a place that they could build their business. So it's looking at attracting outside businesses to come into Pennsylvania, or Pennsylvania businesses that are looking to expand. There would be a ready-made database for them to search sites that are available.
And it's astonishing to me that this is something that we haven't already done.
Let's strip this down to the ultimate fundamental level. What it comes down to is, how do we entice job creators to come to our Commonwealth? We need to make it as easy for them as possible. There are people whose whole job it is to look at different locations throughout, not just the United States, but throughout the world, to site manufacturing plants, to site different facilities that deal with natural gas as its main resource. And often Pennsylvania is overlooked because we have high taxes, because our regulatory environment is that is very difficult for government to move at the speed of business in Pennsylvania. But with some of the reforms in this Energize PA package, similar to the ones that Rebecca was talking about, if we can make it as easy as possible and as attractive as possible for those people whose job it is to locate these plants, to look at Pennsylvania and to bring that investment and to bring those jobs and that productivity here, then that's what we need to do. And I think that the Energize PA package of legislation is ultimately aimed at doing just that.
And they would benefit from that consolidated permit that I just mentioned as well. So that's a great thing. But there's also a bill that would overhaul the entire permitting process, speed up the process, put specific timelines into law, and make applications deemed approved if they aren't processed by the DEP, the Department of Environmental Protection, within the timeline prescribed. And another bill, which I thought was very interesting, is setting up a Pennsylvania Permitting Commission, which would be a separate commission outside of the Department of Environmental Protection to just do permitting. It would take that responsibility out of the department and put it within a commission that can focus solely on that job.
Well, that brings us to the end of the time that we have. Carl and Rebecca, thank you for being here on the program. Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the things that you do?
They can find us at nfib.com/PA or on Facebook or Twitter.
And as ever, if you're looking for Carl and me, you can find us online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So for Carl and Rebecca and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Pennsylvania has divided state government, with a Democrat in the governor's office and Republicans in control of the state legislature. That divide was on full display this past week as the GOP unveiled a plan to lock in the economic gains of the past 2 years, while Governor Wolf proposed a radical environmental agenda that would slam the state's economy into reverse. First, the good news. As a result of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 and the Trump administration's efforts to reduce federal regulations, Pennsylvania's economy is booming. Recent statistics from the State Department of Labor and Industry show a record low unemployment rate of 3.9% and continued job growth. The national economy is so strong, this expansion is happening in Penn's Woods, despite the fact that every survey of state-by-state competitiveness shows our business climate to be near the bottom of the list. In an effort to change that and ensure the economic good times continue, House Speaker Michael Terzai this week announced the Energize PA initiative, which is a, quote, pro-growth, pro-jobs legislative package. The package of bills is designed to capitalize on the fact that energy production is one of the fastest-growing segments of our state's economy. The bills will encourage manufacturing expansion while reducing the regulatory burden and shortening the permitting process. Among the proposals is the creation of Keystone Energy Enhancement Zones that would make businesses eligible for state and local tax exemptions and credits, institution of a tax credit for industries using Pennsylvania methane in their production process, Creation of a registry for abandoned manufacturing sites that will list properties available for development, and making low-cost gas energy more available to residents and to manufacturers. Additionally, the Energize PA plan would create an independent commission that would review and propose changes to the Department of Environmental Protection's permitting process with an eye towards streamlining those procedures, thus allowing companies to adapt more quickly and improve their economic competitiveness. The proposals are environmentally sound, as they will encourage the cleanup of brownfield sites and significantly reduce carbon emissions by helping Pennsylvania meet Clean Power Plan goals ahead of schedule and without government interference. While Republicans propose tried and true measures to expand the state's economy and foster the creation of new family-sustaining jobs, Governor Tom Wolf uncorked his Climate Action Plan, a toxic stew of radical environmental goals which, taken together, form a blueprint for economic disaster. Wolf is embroiling Pennsylvania in the Climate Change Alliance, a loose confederation of states working to undercut President Trump's decision to remove the United States from the Paris Climate Accord. That now discredited agreement placed unrealistic goals and restrictions on so-called greenhouse gas emissions to combat the left's belief that those emissions are somehow contributing to global climate change. Knowing his radical plan could not win approval in the legislature, Governor Wolf has decided to try and advance his environmental agenda through regulation and the deep state bureaucracy. Essentially, a Green New Deal for Pennsylvania, the goal is to completely eliminate CO2 emissions. Well, not only is that unrealistic, it is undesirable and unnecessary. The governor's plan would cripple the economy and devastate family budgets, as it would require the elimination of all carbon-based fuels, meaning no gas-powered cars and trucks, home heating by natural gas or oil, or the manufacture of the thousands of plastic items using carbon byproducts. Having worked itself into a frenzy over climate change and the fact President Trump does not buy into its dire predictions, the left has become even more radicalized. Governor Wolf is fully under their sway. In addition to the danger his proposals pose to the economy and our way of life, his efforts to end-run the legislative process are alarming. These two visions of Pennsylvania's future will collide in coming months as legislative Republicans seek to enact their Energize PA plan while simultaneously preventing the governor from crushing the economic expansion by doing through regulation what he cannot achieve through legislation. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WCCL-FM and WBHV-AM in Johnstown, along with WTYM-AM in Katanning, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped underwrite the CASAS program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal, plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.